props and a play. Is that all we are? Well, that's certainly what they expect from us. Hey, I'd rather be the writer. I'd rather be the lyricist of that play. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, and I'm inviting you to connect the dots between the emotional, the spiritual, and just about everything else. In this edition, number 410 of The Next Thing.
Hi, this is Susie from epostle.net, welcoming you, our worldwide community, to a new episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. And most importantly, you don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, welcome. Glad to have you with us. Today I am recording from Epostle East, the Pasadena studio. Recording on some new equipment, by the way. Yeah, I'll tell you about it later. I'm just excited because, it was just donated to us by a rather large, I'm not at liberty to say, the largest network out there. I'll let you connect the dots. Back in the days when networks were called companies. Anyway, we just got this new donation of a computer. They've been very generous to us in the past through In His Shoes, through Dativ Outreach. This time, this one is a kind of a cool one because it's the Apostle kind of computer. It has all kinds of networking stuff on it. And anyway, share with you later on in the broadcast, our technical section of the cast. But I'm sure you didn't tune in today to find out what kind of processor Father Voskin's computer is running, i7. Nor did you tune in to find out how big Ken Smile is, because he is excited. It's a nice little machine, including the touchscreen. And every time his head bounces on that computer, it switches the screens. I'm just seeing the reflection on this side of the studio. Anyway, we have tuned in today, and we are together to talk about some serious things, particularly coming out of Armenia, out of the border. I shared with you last week on this podcast about what's happening over there and why it's a very special concern for us beyond the ethnicity. I want to continue on this line because, first of all, some developments that came out of there, but also to share with you a process of thought. Because we have made a case for nonviolence. Jesus Christ talks about the power of love. Jesus Christ shares with us the power of good over evil. And in fact, he documents it with his resurrection, the power of life over death. And when we come to these situations of war, it's a difficult process that we have to engage in as Christians, because you are given this command, do not resist evil, and yet there is an evil that's out there, that's intent, hell-bent, so to speak. Yeah, exactly, hell-bent on destroying your life. So do you take charge of your life? Do you take the responsibility for that life? A difficult process, but I want to share with you my personal process during this past few weeks, and I think it'll help you. I think it'll help many people. We shared a little bit of it last night at our Bible study. It was wonderful. We had a great turnout, and we did Periscope it. I want to thank Susie for running that Periscope line on there. And it is now documented and it is archived on our YouTube channel. So make sure that you check out today's show notes. If you didn't watch it last night, it'll be there on today's show notes and you could see the archived copy of it. So let's get to the meat right now. Let's get to what we're going to be talking about, because there is a lot to discuss, especially this ugly war, which has all kinds of markings and signatures of what we're seeing throughout the world as far as its brutality, which makes you question, are we past those days of, well, obviously between the bows and arrows and slings and weapons of that type, but are we past just the normal, and here's a word that they talk about, the humanity of war. It's wild, huh? Isn't that an oxymoron? The humanity of war. But there are certain games that you can play during wars which make it human. Wild, right? A war becomes more humane, becomes more humane. And so when you get to these horrible, barbaric situations in Armenia, beheadings, signature of ISIS going on throughout the world, the destruction of not only human life, but then the desecration of that human life after they've killed somebody, to desecrate the body. And like I said, there are certain rules and regulations in war, and those are all out the door now, which, you know, to me, it makes sense. I mean, the war, how could you have a humane war? How could you make it more humanly likable, accessible? Isn't that horrible? How about eliminating war? And this is where I want to begin today. Because, you know, last year we struggled with this idea of genocide. And I shared it with you openly, and you could check it out. It's been there on the internet. I mean, over and over, I've made the case that we don't need other people to validate reality. It's there. The history is there. The markings are there. The life is there. You don't need other people to validate. But we keep going back to these people that are called the politicians, because they are essentially statespeople. They run governments, and you want them to validate. And this is as old as it gets. You know, you find people that you want to validate your reality. And we've done this. And so we've come to a measuring stick, and we've said that you have to say the word genocide. Yes, big deal among Armenians, that people need to recognize it as a genocide. And so you get your presidents who will go out and they'll call it Medzyeren. Wow. And Armenians get excited because, you know, the president, in this case, an African-American, said Medzyeren. He talked Armenian, and we get so excited about that. He's saying the great tragedy. That's what Medzyeren translates to. And in Armenians, it was traditionally referred to as Medzyeren. Yeren is tragic, this of epic proportions. In fact, I remember 1965 when the Zizer Nagapert monument was first opened. It was referred to as Yererni, Yerern, the tragedy. It always has. But recently we have bent over backwards to try to get the world community to use this word called genocide. Why? Because when you use the word genocide, it puts it into a different level. There's a small little clip. I'll make sure it's on today's show notes. Watch it. Condoleezza Rice, a former Secretary of State under the Bush administration, talking with Adam Schiff. And Senator Schiff, I believe he was a representative of that at that time, makes the point that, Madam Secretary, we know the power of words. Why has the Bush administration not used the word genocide? Check out this video. I'll make sure it's on today's show notes. It reminded me that, yeah, wow, that was pretty powerful. But he makes the point that the word genocide needs to use. Okay, be used. Well, okay, I'll accept that. Now, why can't we make the point that the word peace needs to be used? And just saying the word peace is the ultimate starting point, because we're talking about it. We're discussing at a different level. Same way, when you say genocide, you're not talking about war, you're not talking about tragedy, you're not talking about this Yeren, you're talking about a specific, systematic annihilation of a group of people. Why can't we start talking about peace in that same method, in that same way of insisting that this is the platform of Christianity? And everybody goes out there to talk about Christianity is this and that. I have looked at so many, it's tiring, of people's comments on the internet, on blogs, on Facebook posts, you know, putting up videos. We are the first Christian nation. You're not the first Christian nation. The first Christian nation was Saint Gregory the Illuminator bringing it there, and you had King Durtad who was sitting there and he converted it. And at that point you had this incredible group of people who understood Christianity in a different means. I'm going to read to you something right now, and I want you to listen to it very carefully. Because I'm incensed at this point. You've got bishops, archbishops, priests posting things like, we are the first Christian nation. You've got a Catholicos who's out in Karabakh. You should hear, I'll make sure that it's on today's show notes too. Check out what Adam Catholicos is saying to the troops. It's just inciting war, and you know, it's exciting because he is, he is prolific speaker, they call it. You know, he yells and screams and he gets people excited. But what's that excitement about? At the end of it, how do you justify it with the power that you do have? And I want to share with you that power. I have shared with you that power. We're not availing ourselves to that power. It's like, here, take your choice. You've got a gun over here. You've got a bomb over here. You've got nuclear weapons over here. And then you've got this secret weapon over here. Which one do you pick? Well, I'm going to pick the strongest one. The problem is you don't know how strong that secret weapon is, right? Because it is a secret. And we keep it a secret rather than exploiting it and saying that, wow, there is something that Christ gave us that is more powerful than that nuclear weapon, than that bomb, than that gun. Now, are we willing to go out on a limb and explore that secret weapon and see what that is? And I know, you need cheerleaders. And you know, cheerleaders do a good job. They get you excited about the home team. And, you know, you got these priests and thumbs up and yes, this is who we are. You got Catholicos says, this is what we are and about. We are the first Christian nation and we did this and we did that. You did not do anything. I want to share with you. I said I'm going to share this with you. Because you know what? That method is so much so easier. I want to share with you the words of St. Vartan Magonya. Now, this goes back to 451. And I don't want to surprise you with this after I read it. I want to tell you beforehand. So you listen to the language. 451, this is 150 years after Christianity has been accepted in Armenia. You would think that it would be kind of like loose at this point. 150 years in the whole grand scheme of things is not much, but it is sufficient that the Armenians were willing to go out and say, look, this is what we believe. This is Vartan Mamigonyan's words. From this faith, no one can shake us, neither angels nor men, neither sword, nor fire, nor water, nor any, nor all other horrid tortures. All our goods and our possessions are in your hands. Our bodies are before you. Dispose of them as you will. If you leave us to our beliefs, you will, here on earth, we will, here on earth, choose no other master in your place. Okay? This is it. This is, in this world, you're our master. And in heaven, choose no other God in place of Jesus Christ. For there is no other God. Wow. Let me just read that to you again. Vartan Mamigonyan, 451. If you leave us to our belief, we will, here on earth, choose no other master in your place, and in heaven choose no other God in place of Jesus Christ, for there is no other God. But should you require anything beyond this great testimony, here we are. Our bodies are in your hands. Do with them as you please. Torture from you, submission from us. The sword is yours, the neck is ours. We are no better than our forefathers who, for the sake of this faith, surrendered their goods, their possessions, and their bodies. This is beyond heavy duty, right? Were we even immortal, it would become us to die for the love of Christ. For he himself was immortal and so loved us that he took death on himself, that we, by his death, might be freed from eternal death. And since he did not spare his immortality, we, who became mortal of our own will die for his love willingly, so that he may make us participants in his immortality. We should die as mortals, that he accepts our death as that of immortals. Do not therefore interrogate us further concerning all this, because our bond of faith is not with men to be deceived like children. Listen to this. It's not with men to be deceived like children. What are we going up to people saying, please, look at this, accept us? No. But our bond is with God, to whom we are indissolubly bound, and from whom nothing can detach and separate us, neither now, nor later, nor forever, nor forever and ever. Wow. This is only 150 years after Christianity was accepted, did these people make this statement. And here we are, 2,000 years later, we're talking about all kinds of wild ideas. Thumbing up and telling people go out there and get killed and not really thinking beyond the means that we have. Vahan Tekean has this beautiful poem called the Yegeretzin Haigagan, the Church of Armenia. And in it he says there is a secret path to heaven that the Armenian church has. I shared with you when I got back from the cradle of civilization, from Ararat. I got back from Ararat, from both sides of Ararat, Artsakh. I told you that there's a secret there that we're not tapping into. And it's accessible. And we as the church have this opportunity to present this. And we're not. We're sitting and talking about ridiculous things. And so, is there a power in words? Yes, there is. There's just as there is a power in saying that word genocide, there's also a power in saying the word peace. And I'm going to be talking about that right after this song. Let's enjoy this for a few moments, and I'll be right back. Nobody's Fault by the Dixie Hummingbirds. I needed to hear that today. Did you? I don't know. I just needed to hear a little bit of gospel, a little bit of blues. I hope you enjoyed that one. Let's put it in, as Rod Serling would say, for what it's worth department, okay? And leave it at that. There'll be a link on today's show notes. You could check out that song as well as all the other great, great music that comes from the Dixie Hummingbirds. Let's get back to our show.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
I think last week as I left you, I told you I was going to be participating in a demonstration at the Azuri Consulate, and we went out there on Friday, last Friday, and it was organized by the Armenian Youth Federation, the AYF over here, a branch of the Armenian Revolutionary Federation, and it was kind of interesting. We went there, and we spent about 2 hours on the street. It was civil protest, civil disobedience, as far as sitting right on Wilshire Boulevard, one of the main thoroughfares. I believe the longest street in Southern California, definitely in Los Angeles. It goes from the Civic Center of Los Angeles all the way out to the Pacific Ocean. And it has its business districts all up and down. So we went and blocked traffic and we made a statement. I was the only priest there. There was another priest who had come undercover, I guess incognito. He came and said hello to me, but he kind of like went away. I was the only priest, and it was interesting. I had gone with the union group. Here's what was interesting to me. We were out there for about 2 hours chanting, and like I said, it was organized by the AYF, and they did a remarkable job. They did some great, great work, but at the end of the day, it was about 2 hours out there on the street with cameras rolling, with people paying attention, or were they, and everything was chanted, everything was said in Armenian language. So at the end of the day, if you count it, and it is on YouTube, you could check out what I'm telling you. About 2 hours, I would say about 10, maybe at the most 15 minutes were in English. The rest of it was in Armenian. And so on the one hand, I'm waiting there, waiting for them to say something in English. On the other hand, I'm realizing that these people are smart. They know that the non-Armenian audience is not going to pick up to this, nor do they care about it. They know that the Azeris, where we're at, the consulate where we're at, could care less that little small group of Armenians are protesting out there. So rather than spend and exert the time on getting that message out, how about spending that same time in preparing your troops, preparing your people with a message of, you know, of rebellion, with a message of remembrance, so that at the end of the day, the Armenian cause is remembered by your own people. Actually, the strategy, if that were the case, I'm not sure if it is, but in my head, that's what it came down to. It's basically preparing your own troops. I thought it was rather well implemented and done well. This was last Friday. Last Sunday, I had the awesome responsibility of leading the Divine Liturgy at our church in Glendale, during which we remembered the first 44 victims, martyrs, of the Azeri attacks in Armenia. And I got to tell you, it was a very emotional morning for me, having these names in my hands, having to read them, and especially putting them next to the prayers of the Armenian Church. And this is what happened. I was praying, and the hymns of the Armenian Church were going by. Ja,
Marije vas tad djal srpojec vo zderače stu.
Yevyevs chalutyan zderache suk. Interesting word, chalutyun. It's used so often. As I'm celebrating this liturgy, I'm hearing the deacons recite, "And again in peace, let us beseech the Lord." Yevyevs chalutyan zderache suk angal getsoyev hormia. Let us beseech the Lord again in peace. And I'm thinking to myself, what in again in peace? When have we had peace that we dare to say again in peace? Unless our definition of peace is skewed. And it got me thinking. Got me thinking about what we're doing over here. What is this message about? What is this message that we're offering or not offering to the people? We talk about peace. We talk about the Prince of Peace being in our midst. And yet, we don't have an answer to what's going on in our daily life. And my head all of a sudden, this is really wild, because 2 weeks earlier, it was Easter. We have a family tradition. Once a year, we sit down as a family and we watch Jesus Christ Superstar. It is a fantastic little movie based on the opera of the same name, which came out in 1970, the opera, but they made a movie. And here's what's interesting about the movie. The movie is very much like a passion play in that the characters all come, and it is filmed on location in Israel. The characters in the entire movie, the entire passion of our Lord Jesus Christ is expressed in this movie. They appear in this location scene in Israel. They arrive in a bus, all of them: Jesus, Judas, Peter, the apostles, Mary Magdalene, Caiaphas, Annas, the chief priests, the people, the crowds. They all arrive in this bus, and they unpack the bus. They live through the passion of our Lord Jesus Christ. From Palm Sunday, his triumphant entry into Jerusalem, to his betrayal after the Last Supper, to the denial of Peter and the rest of the disciples, to his trials, to his brutal assassination at the cross, and of course all the different types of torture that he had to endure as he went up to the cross. And so this movie ends with a rather interesting ending. It is the scene of the cross, the empty cross, of course, and all the players in the movie, the entire cast, get back on the bus, and they leave that location site in Israel, except for Jesus. Now, it's not a big deal in the movie. It just sort of fades into the credits for the movies. But it is a big deal if you're kind of like looking around what's going on, and you see a silhouetted cross, and you see a small little shadow walking under the cross along with some sheep. And if you happen to notice it, it's not very pronounced. If you happen to notice it, you will make the connection that that is maybe Jesus followed by the sheep. He's pasturing position, and he is walking against the empty cross. But meanwhile, all the players have left. So you have this bus coming in, doing the work, going through the passion, and then leaving without Jesus. And I sat there at the altar last Sunday, having this image in my head of the bus leaving, and what is difference between that and what we do on every Sunday. Every Sunday at the Holy Divine Liturgy, we come in, all the players. Some people come and they prepare the moss, the bread. Others come in and they open the doors and they wipe the seats, make sure that it's nice and ready. Others will come and adjust the air conditioning or the heater so people can be comfortable. Others will adjust the candles. Others will come in and take the collections. Still others will come in for the worship. They come and sit down. They come and make, go through all the gestures. They cross themselves. They go through everything. The priest comes in and he plays out the part. He recites the parts that are called priest. Choir does their bit. Deacons do their bit. And at the end of the day, what happens? They leave. They leave. And they leave Christ in that church. Do they leave with Christ? Or do they leave Christ in the church? Much like the movie, the bus comes, they do their work, and then they leave, leaving Christ behind. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks that there is no difference from the metaphor that that movie was trying to present and what we go through every Sunday. We basically go through motions and we leave Christ back at the church rather than take Christ with us outside of that church. And herein is the key and the secret and the problem with what's going on. We fail to understand that there is a living tradition which implies that, not only implies, it is, becomes a relevant tradition for our lives, in our daily lives. In other words, that Christ needs to be taken out of the church. And we are the vehicles by which that Christ is taken out and is delivered to the world. Let me say that again, okay? The Christ has to be taken out of the church. We are the vehicles by which Christ leaves the church and we take Christ into the world. And so, basically, the Holy Eucharist, the Holy Communion for us is encapsulated Jesus Christ, so that as we leave the church, we're taking Christ with us. Not only metaphorically, but actually physically. He is within us. Okay, so it's not just some kind of a nice idea, but he is actually in us. And if you believe that, think about what you can change out there. Think about the prospects for peace. Now we start understanding what St. Vartan was saying. Now it's no longer rhetoric. Now you can yell and scream all you want, but you're understanding what it means to be the first Christian nation. Not just by words, not just by Facebook posts, but understanding that you are part of that tradition and you are walking out of that church, taking Jesus Christ with you. Now what happens? Well, now it starts making sense. Now you understand how peace fits into the whole equation. When they say, again in peace, yes, again in peace, because peace is with me. You understand what it means when the priest turns to the people and says, peace unto all, because now peace has a definition. It's grounded in Jesus Christ. Now you understand what's going on. Now this is not easy. It requires us to push ourselves from the standard mentalities that we have. No matter where we are in the church, if you're the parish council person, you've got to go beyond that idea that yours is just the function to stand there and sell candles and direct people. No, Jesus Christ, you have that mission there. If you're in the Sunday school, you've got to understand that it's more than just teaching children about how to make the sign of the cross or color this picture of God, but to understand that in that picture, in that sign of the cross, there is an opportunity for that child to engage with his maker, with Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, and planting those seeds, just as they did at the AYF function, planting those seeds for not only rebellion, but the true rebellion that every soul must go endure. If you're in the choir, it's understanding that it's more than just dressing up your hair and putting on one of those robes, whether you're in the choir or serving at the altar. If you're in the ladies' society, understanding that that cake that you bake, the pilaf that you make in the kitchen, has a cause, has a purpose. And at the end of the day, it has to all be channeled towards that peace. That's what we're about. And if you're a priest, you have to understand that it's more than just this function of showing up and doing this ritual, of bowing down to people who give money, but instead understanding that you are an author right there. Why do I say this? Well, look what happened. Last Sunday after the service, we had the Requiem service. I had to remember the name of 44 young men who passed away. Some of them had next to their names their positions within the armed forces, sergeant, lieutenants, captains. It was very difficult to read these names, because as I was reading, you understand that these are all basically kids. And I believe somebody told me afterwards, of the 44, I think 30 of them were under the age of 30. They're kids. They could be your kids. They're out there fighting a war that is caused by an enemy who wants to instigate that war, for whom that life doesn't matter, for who has no concept of the Prince of Peace, who has no concept of what the cradle of civilization is. What God has created, let no man put asunder, is not just the call for the wedding, the marriage between a man and a woman, but is the call for all of humanity. God has created that. And yet the enemy is sitting there ready to fire, ready to destroy, to disrupt what God has created. And so I'm sitting there with this list and feeling completely inadequate. What does it mean to pray for the souls of these kids? Of course these kids are in heaven. Of course these kids have been justified. Of course God loves these children. What are we praying for? That question needs to be asked. Because when we ask it, we start realizing that we are part of that equation too. No, it's not just that we're going to leave Jesus in that church. Jesus needs to come out with us, needs to be delivered to the people. But it didn't all make sense until the following morning when I got a call from the diocese and says, "Come, we want you to come to a candlelight vigil that's going to be held Tuesday evening at City Hall, Los Angeles City Hall. We're going to make some noise." And I was planning on going, and unfortunately for some personal reasons, I was unable to attend. I would have gone, so I'm not saying I didn't attend it in protest. No, unfortunately, last minute for some personal reasons, I couldn't attend. But here are the thoughts that went into my head. What are we but the props? Props. Now, I want you to think about this. Think about it in the context of what I shared with you. This bus showing up, doing the passion play, and then leaving Jesus there. Of all of us getting together and going to church and doing all the motions, getting the mosque ready, the pews ready, celebrating the divine liturgy, and then walking out, leaving Jesus there. And now we've been called in to do the props. And I knew what was going to happen in my head. I went through it. And I shared this with my wife. I was telling her, like, I know I'm just going to go there and go crazy. Because you know if they bring in one bishop, they've got to bring in the other bishop to balance it out. You know that if they bring in the apostolic, the Orthodox group, they have to bring in the Protestants. They have to bring in the Catholics. And basically the priest will stand in a line. And sure enough, that's what they did. I'm going to put a picture on today's show notes. Do check that picture out. First of all, it's interesting because basically the priests are lined up as props. They're standing up there, and we're going to go through the definition of prop in just a moment. But check out, there's a guy in the front row with some wild shoes and wild socks. That is the county supervisor who pretends that he is a Christian. His name is Antonovich, and unfortunately, he's being termed out this year. Unfortunately, because I would love to vote him out. Just a useless person. And he is up there. He's been so long in power, and basically he's snubbing his nose, the people. And we buy into that. We give him the place of honor, and we let him sit over there. And then he has the audacity to come and give his little rhetoric about what's going on in the world. Check out the way he's dressed on there. It's like basically no reverence. You're talking about young kids have died. You're talking about a nation that is in mourning, and you show up with these striped socks? Hey, come on. Anyway, that's on the sideline. Do check out that picture, okay? I'll make sure that's in there, okay? But look at the idea of the priests in that same picture as the props. Now, I want to read to you the definition. This is not my own definition. This is actually, you know what, dude, just a Google search on the word props. Okay, and you're going to find out that the prop is a noun. Now, listen to this, okay? A pole or beam used as a support or to keep something in position, typically one that is not an integral part of the living, of the thing supported. What? A pole or beam used as a support or to keep something in position, typically one that is not an integral part of the thing supported. Not an integral part. And isn't this the way they treat the priests? The way the community has a perception of the priests and the bishops. You're not an integral part. Even the Catholicos who goes out there and starts yelling at the troops and saying, we've got to do this and do that. Not an integral part of the daily life of the people. Because Christ hasn't been delivered there. Because that child doesn't understand that he is receiving the Holy Sacrament. And I'm being a little bit harsh because I happen to know in Artsakh, with the current situation over there, those troops, those Armenians there, are more in tune than we here in the diaspora, more in tune with the idea of Christ being in that Eucharist. But when we understand that that Holy Eucharist has a function, we are no longer props. Because as I was thinking about that, okay, we're going to go to this demonstration and we're going to be standing up there like props. Make sure that we have a Catholic, make sure we have a Protestant, make sure we have an Orthodox, we have a priest, we have a bishop. Let's balance this out. That's what props are, okay? Let's make sure we have a left side exit, we have a right side tree, we've got to balance it off with a cloud up in the air, make sure that it all looks right. Rather than believing in ourselves and understanding that this is not about a play, the Passion Play is one of Jesus Christ coming, of God taking human form and loving us so much that he wants to be in union with his creation. Do we dare say that? And now we start understanding that the Divine Liturgy, the Bavarok, has a purpose. It's to celebrate that. And now we understand that it is not just a play production. It is not just an operetta. It is not just a concert that we are going to. And if it's not a concert we're going to, if it's not on the stage, then guess what? You don't need the props. And certainly, the clergy should not be the props. Instead, you need writers. You need lyricists. You need people who are thinking and processing and sharing what they have gotten from the message, from the main fountain from which we drink. And that's a tough one because it means we need a paradigm shift. We've got to get away from the idea that this is just about doing a ritual, but understanding that there is an opportunity to make this faith relevant. When John Lennon got up and he said, give peace a chance, all we are saying is give peace a chance. It's no different than what the church has been saying for the last 2,000 years. And 500-600 years before that, when Isaiah the prophet said, he will be called Prince of Peace. He foretold the coming of Jesus Christ by reference to peace, by saying he is peace. He is the Prince of Peace. And for 2,000 years, that's been the message. That's what Vartan said. He says, hey, go ahead. You can kill our bodies. You're not going to kill the spirit. You're not going to kill the soul because there is only one God and that God is Jesus Christ. What? You try to say that today in an Armenian community? No way. But you tell them that Vartan Mamigonyan said it and you go, oh yeah, we're the first Christian nation. I'm sorry, I've heard it just too many times. Got to get away from the rhetoric. We've got to make it relevant, and we have the power to do that. Stop thinking of ourselves as props in this giant production, and instead understanding that we are the writers. We are the stars, because Christ has selected us, and he puts us there, and he has us share. And once we are the stars, we have to realize that there is an awesome responsibility that goes with that. To deliver the message night and night and night again in the production, day and day and again in our lives. Taking Christ out of the church and delivering him to a world that is that needs him and is waiting for that peace. Here's Susie to tell you about what we're doing. I'm going to come back and share some fun stuff with you, too.
Hi, this is Susie for In His Shoes Ministries. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I wanted to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. This means we must avail ourselves to technology's latest tools. Your donations help us expand and deliver this message to a waiting world. Please support us by pressing on the donate button at epostle.net. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, we've got a big smile on Ken's face today. He is using this new computer. New to us, I guess it has been used. It's exciting because it was donated by one of the large networks. And they asked that we keep it private because I don't know. I guess there are reasons. But they did donate it to us. I guess I can tell you that this network is so old and so big that it is referred to as a company. Before network was known and as official brand of something. Yeah, big company. Yeah, well, you know, move around the dials on your TV and you can figure out who it is, okay? Anyway, beautiful computer. It's running an i7 processor. It's got touch screen. We've got our stuff on there, slowly occupying more of the space on there. Ken is just beaming today. He is beaming that he's getting to use this machine. And on top of it, it is from a broadcasting studio. So it comes with certain little functions and features that are conducive to the broadcasting world. So we're excited. But this is just one part of it. And if you enjoy these podcasts, if you enjoy this kind of programming that we have for you, we ask for your donation. It's a little bit different. I shared with some friends during the weekend that, you know, so often it's so easy to give to buildings. And buildings are important. I'm sure they have importance in different ways. I've shared this with you in the past. Be happy to do it in the future. I've been in building projects. I've built enough of these buildings to know how important that structure is. But buildings are useless if there's nobody inside of it. Quality programming, getting that programming inside of those buildings is what is essential and what is necessary. When you contribute to Epostle, to In Issues, you're contributing to that programming. And that programming is an important one. So we want to ask you to be generous in your giving. There's, as Susie said, there's a button on our website. You could do, you could check it out. You could donate that way. You could always drop a check in the mail to St. Peter Armenian Church, 632 West Stocker, Glendale, California, 91202. Make the check made out to In His Shoes, or just put it in the memo, whatever's easy for you. Hey, I want to call it a day today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. There's a lot of frustration that's going on right now. Our entire mode of operations has to be working towards peace. You know that In His Shoes Ministries has championed the causes of people in Darfur, as well as the Sudan, as well as in Syria. Today, the pendulum has moved over to Armenia. We need to be focusing in on what's going on in Armenia, what's going on in Artsakh. Put an end to this aggression that is happening by the Azeris, and understand that this section of land, which God has selected to be the cradle of civilization, in other words, all of humanity begins right there at the base of Mount Ararat, is in danger right now, is in danger, and it needs all of our attention, all of our support. So with that, I want to, let's see if I can't put a link on today's shows for contributions. People have been asking, where can we contribute? Of course, In Issues is always open to any humanitarian effort. You can always donate to In Issues and just earmark it for Artsakh Relief, and we'll make sure that the donation gets out that way. So with that being said, I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to invite you to our website. Drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. feedback@epostle.net. Do check us out on the internet, In His Shoes, and also check out the AC 101, last week's show about peace, about what's going on in Armenia. It is on the Diocesan, Western Diocesan Facebook page. It went viral with thousands of people watching it, and there should be a new one coming out, boy, by the time you get this podcast. It is Facebook Western Diocese on their page. Anyway, I want to thank you all for joining us, and look forward to hearing from you. On behalf of our producer, Susie, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cut out!